So I'm preaching this morning on a thing I think we understand in that picture. I think there's something we sort of hear, but it's maybe we're hearing it a bit tinny or a bit distorted. And I feel like the Lord wants to come this morning and actually flip that switch and make something very, very, very clear to us as a people. And I'm preaching this morning on confidence. But when I say confidence, this is not some 10-step course of self-improvement on how to be a more confident person. That's not what I'm after. I want to ground us and build us on the confidence that we have in our faith, the confidence that we have in our hope, the confident future that we have in the person of Jesus and in the work of the cross and in what he's done. And I want to just orientate us quick. So I know this is our first week back for a lot of our guys. And so even this is not a preach that I suddenly had a good idea on and thought I would do. I'm actually building on something that Luke has laid in the first 2 weeks of this year. And Luke preached in the first week on the 4th of Jan on perseverance. That perseverance is this thing where we remain under whatever it is that God has us under, to remain in God as we do it, to push through, to run our race with endurance, to cast off sin, disappointment, grudges, hurts, so that we can actually run unencumbered in the things that the Lord has called us to. That this is a race we run in, for, towards, with the person of Jesus, that we understand that pressure and difficulty produces something in us. It's not just suffering for the sake of suffering. It is an endurance that puts character into us, and that character strengthens the confident hope that we have in Jesus. And I'm going to be using that word confidence a lot. If there's a thing this preaches on, it is confidence. It is assurance. And then the next week he preached on faith. That faith is this assurance. It's the underlying foundation on which we build our faith, we build our lives. And what is faith? It's a conviction, it's a certainty of the unshakable truth of who God is and of who we are in him. And that as we fix our eyes on him, as we walk in faith, the distractions disappear. We're able to run towards in what he has in us. The discouragement falls away. And that this faith must look like something. Faith has got to lead you somewhere. If your faith is not working itself out in action, it's not real faith. It's wishful thinking. Faith is spelt R-I-S-K. If you missed it last week, let me bring you up to speed. This year is the year, according to Luke Watson, it is 2020 risk. We know it doesn't rhyme. We're going with it. It is 2020 risk. Okay. It works. It's going to happen. It's already been done. It's out there. The recording's happened. It's 2020 risk. Okay, so today I want to talk about this confidence that we have in Jesus, the confident hope that our faith must bring. Because if you lack confidence, it's very, very difficult to walk in the things that Jesus has for us. And what is confidence? It's the knowledge, feeling, and belief that we can rely on or have faith in someone or something. It is a confident assurance. It is a reliance. It's a thing on which we build. Because when we are confident, assured, we are secure, and we step out. I've been teaching my boy Ezra to surf, and I love it. I'm fairly comfortable in the water. I don't mind things being a little bit crazy in the ocean, but he's not there yet. He can swim, but he's not super strong. But I go with him, and when I go with him, I call him into deeper water. I call him into scary waves. I actually take him into a place he's got no place being. That boy should not be in the waters I take him to. I'm serious, not alone. Ellie sits on the beach interceding. But I mean, serious, that's what confidence is. Because of who I am, because I am a dad, because I love him, because I know what I'm doing, because I'm out there, that boy is punching so far above his weight class when it comes to water. And that is the kind of confidence that the Lord is calling us to have. And why do we need it? We need an assurance or confidence that our perseverance is going to produce something. If I did not think my perseverance would take me somewhere, I just wouldn't persevere, because then you're just suffering. Perseverance with no looking to the future, no confidence that it's going to lead to something, is just suffering. And I don't want to do that. But we also need an assurance and a confidence that our faith is secure. If Ezra had faith in his own abilities to paddle out into the ocean, things would not go well. The fact that his faith is rooted in me, in the fact that I'm with him, makes him safe. And so I'm preaching a lot out of the first kind of five chapters of Romans, and it's actually an incredible book. If you want to set your year up well, just take the first five or six chapters of Romans, go and sit down and read them with a Bible commentary. It'll change the way you see yourself. It'll change the way you see Jesus. It changed my year, and that's why I'm preaching what I'm preaching here this morning. But it's an interesting church that Paul is writing to. He's writing to this church in Rome, and it's made up of two very different and distinct groups of people. It's the Jews, who have the covenant, they've got the history, they've got the law, they've got the culture, they've got the identity as the chosen people of God, and now Jesus has come and has kind of messed with their whole system. And then there's the Gentiles, the non-Jews, who suddenly also seem to have this faith in Jesus, but they don't have the law, and they don't have circumcision, and they don't have the covenant, and they don't have the histories and traditions. And yet, Paul is writing to them, and they both come into this relationship with Jesus through the same channel, and it's this thing of faith. And so he's writing to these two diverse groups, and he lays these kind of five foundations, which are incredible. He says that faith alone, faith is what makes us right with God, not the fact that you're a Jew, not the fact that you follow the law, not the fact that you don't follow the law. It is faith that makes us right with God. That true faith is counted as righteousness in us. That righteousness, and when we say righteousness, we're talking about right standing. That's what it means to be righteous. It's not that you're perfect. It is that you are in right standing. Your position in God is correct. Righteousness produces this confidence in us. Confidence will produce a hope in us, and hope is the thing that will keep us to the end. We don't do things that don't have hope in them. I go to work every day, hoping that on the 25th, there's going to be a little notification in my bank saying, well done, Adam, here's your salary. I eat well, hoping to stay healthy. I train my children, hoping that one day they'll follow Jesus. I invest in my marriage, hoping that it's going to last till the end and that it's going to be a beautiful and fruitful marriage. That is hope. But even those things, they seem predictable, but they're not certain. The hope that God is calling us to is an assurance. The hope God wants us to have, it's a certain and a confident hope. And so it's not the kind of hope where, wow, I hope one day I get to have a jet ski. It's a confident expectation, a full assurance, a joyful anticipation of God's promised future. Anchored not in the circumstances, anchored not in what I see, anchored not in what I know around me, but anchored in the person, the nature, the character, the promises, the word of Jesus. That is my hope. That is why I do all the things I do. That is why I make the difficult choices of following him, because, man, there is something at the end that I'm aiming for. I wonder if you could put up Hebrews 10, verse 19 to 24. Should probably get some scriptures going here. Okay, it says, therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart, full of assurance or confidence of faith, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience, and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and to good deeds. And that's what I want to do this morning. I want to spur us on. And I want to tell us why we should be running and why we can run, why we can lean on and rely on these promises of God. And the confidence is this. It is that through the work of the cross, I have got a right relationship with God. That's the sum total of all of the confidence I want to walk in, because it's that Jesus, that his blood, that the work of the cross, that him having paid the price, that him having set me free from all my sin and brokenness, gives me access to the person of Jesus. that even when I do mess up, there is a high priest there standing between me and the Father, interceding for me, praying for me, saying, Lord, don't look at Adam, look at me. Look at my blood that covers him. Look at the righteousness that I've put on him. And I love that word, righteous, because it means that I justify. So God, when he says your righteousness, he's meaning I justify you. My righteousness is not based on me, thank goodness, but it's on him. And when I'm confident that my faith is secure, when I'm confident that I'm following Jesus, I do dumb things. I step out. I take risks. I make decisions that don't necessarily make a lot of sense to the world. I start giving away money. I start loving at my own expense. I start leaving jobs and leaving homes and leaving countries and following the person of Jesus. Not because, gee, wow, I hope this works out, but no, I am confident that there is a God who is there, who has called me, who has equipped me, who is going to make up for every shortcoming I have because he is good. And then I start to take risks because I am confident. And I don't know if any of you have ever started a new job or a marriage or you've done anything that you haven't necessarily done before. And it's scary at the start. It's like, man, I don't really know what I'm doing. I feel a little uncertain. We kind of feel our way forward carefully. But man, if you watch someone who's been doing what they do for 10 years and they're good, man, they go at that thing. They run. They enjoy their jobs. They find pleasure in enjoying it because there's a confidence in them. And that is the confidence that I think that the Lord wants to put in us as we follow him. And so I want to spur us on this morning to this love, to good deeds. I want us to run this race full of joy. It's not just endurance for the sake of, oh, wow, I'm going to get there. It is endurance knowing that, man, already I've got the Lord with me. Already there's an inheritance there. Already there's something I'm aiming at. Already there's a promise that I'm walking and living in. And that makes me happy. It is epic to follow Jesus when we have that. And it's this assurance in our position, in who we are in him. Ephesians 3:12, it says that through faith in him, we may approach God with freedom and with confidence. Can I ask you, how many of you walked in this morning approaching the Lord with confidence? Good. You walked into worship knowing that I am going to stand before the King and worship him, and he is going to find me acceptable. I think there are a lot of us who didn't. A lot of us had hard weeks. A lot of us messed up. A lot of us got stuck. You're no different than me. Me too. Hebrews 11:1 says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we don't see. Assurance. I can count on, I can rely on the things that I don't see but that I know to be true because he says it. I've known some guys though who've been very confident who shouldn't necessarily have been. And confidence is very good if it is grounded in truth and if it is a reasonable confidence. But I'm going to tell you a story about a young man who some of you may know. He was very confident. He was at a hangout. There was a bunch of guys hanging out. And he's a very gifted young man, loves the Lord, full of passion, great discipler of people, loves beautifully, steps out in the prophetic, got beautiful leadership qualities on him, is really coming through in a lot of amazing ways. But there's one area in which he's not massively proficient, and that's in floating, swimming. Hasn't necessarily been fully matured and developed in his ability to swim. And there was this hangout, and there was a pool, and everybody was having an amazing time, and jumping into the pool, and he with confidence looked and said, I can do this. I see what they're doing. I'm going to imitate their faith. And he jumped in and he sank to the bottom because he could not swim. And he's no longer with us. He didn't die. He just went to another congregation. Just went to another congregation. He is fine. Fortunately, there were other people who were further along in their walk who discipled him from the bottom of the pool and brought him up and saved him. But our confidence, if our confidence is misplaced, if our faith is misplaced, it can cost us everything. It can cost us our lives. It can shipwreck us if we're not building on the correct and the foundation. And so this confidence I want to put in you is a true confidence, an assurance of your standing, that you are righteous and in right standing because of your faith. And that is what our confidence is based on. It is on faith. And true confidence is this. There are two things. It is that all of our failures, all of our shortcomings, all of our brokenness, in spite of all of those things, in spite of all the stuff you struggled with and got stuck in before you knew Jesus and are still stuck in spite of all of that, you are able to be made right in God's sight. Even now, all your brokenness, that addiction, that thing you're still struggling to get away from, you can right now be in right standing with God. And the second part of that confidence is that there is only one way that that happens, which I like. I like one steps. But there is one way that this happens, and it is through faith. This is the good news of the gospel. It is that you and I actually had no hope. And through what Jesus did, we now have a hope. Through what Jesus did, we can be in right standing. Romans 1, verse 16 to 17. Can we put that up quick? It says, I am not ashamed of this good news about Christ. It is the power of God at work, saving everyone who believes, the Jew first and also the Gentile. This good news tells us how God makes us right in his sight. This is accomplished from start to finish by faith. It is by faith we come to Jesus. It is by faith we keep following Jesus. It is by faith that one day I will see Jesus face to face. It is in faith. It is built on faith. Faith is the fruit of it. Faith is the substance of it. Faith is the journey we walk. There is nothing else added to this but faith. It doesn't say by faith and trying really hard or by faith and sorting out that addiction. It is from faith to faith. Faith is the start. Faith is the end. Faith is the journey. And that is good news for us because Romans carries on later to say that all have sinned and fallen short. Yes, every single one of the elders in this building has sinned and fallen short. Every single one of the little newborn babies are born into sin and will fall short. And so thank goodness that this thing does not rely on us, because what hope would we have? And that because of our sin, because of our brokenness, because of the divide between us and God, Jesus comes and pays this price that we could never afford, this price that we can never repay. He pays it. He says, I've done it. You're square. Your debt's wiped clean. Go and stand before your Father in right standing. That is the good news of the gospel, that God is just. Our sin requires a punishment. There's a penalty for the things that we do, but he's also the justifier, where he comes and says, I know that you can't pay this, but I love you and I want you and I'm going to pay it for you. And I want you to know that it's called the good news, and it's not just news. It's good. That is incredible. I hope you get excited about that. I hope it makes you feel really, really good about your life and about your future. And it is news. It's information. It's coming to us. But it also says that it is power. The power of this good news. It's not just informational. It changes me. I am not the same person that I was when I met Jesus. He transformed me. The power of this gospel actually transformed and changed me in the way I am. It took me from where I was and made me something new. It put me in a new position in him. It changes me still as I follow him. I'm not the same when I met him. And I'm not going to be the same a week from now. And if I keep following him a year from now, I'll be even more different. And one day when I see him face to face, I will be unrecognizable from the man I was born. And all of this is through faith. And what I love about this righteousness, it's the Greek word. Let's throw some Greek in here. The Greek word for righteousness is dikaiou. And it actually means, it's a first person verb. It is that I justify. So when God looks at you, he doesn't say, hey, you did really well, you're justified. God looks at you and says, I look at you, I see exactly what you are. I justify you. And what I love about that is that he is the only one who can. His is the only justification that matters. His is the highest authority. So if he justifies me, I don't care what anybody else thinks. Take it to him. And that is it. That is the whole story. That is the entirety of your right standing before God. That is the full weight of all the evidence against which the not guilty verdict is going to be leveled at you one day. The enemy can bring every accusation. People can bring every accusation. The full weight of every wrong thing you've done will stand up against you, and the judge, God, is going to look at them and say, it's inadmissible. We cannot count that evidence. The evidence that I have outweighs. Look at my son Jesus. He is perfect, and his blood covers Adam. Jesus has paid the price. Jesus has bought our freedom. Romans 5, verse 1 to 2, it says, therefore, since we have been made right in God's sight by faith, we have peace with God. How many of you are convinced right now that you have peace with God? That you're not at war with him? That if he looks at you, it's like you're good. Welcome. We have peace with God because of what Jesus Christ, our Lord, has done for us. Because of our faith, God has brought us into this place of undeserved privilege where we now stand. And we confidently and joyfully look forward to sharing in his glory. Is your walk with Jesus joyful? Is your walk with Jesus joyful? Do you enjoy it? Or does it just feel like, man, I am working really, really, really hard to be a good Christian, and I'm exhausted? Can I submit to you that maybe your confidence is in the wrong place? Maybe your confidence is in your ability to get it right. I don't see that in the Bible. It is from faith, by faith, through faith, not in you, but in him. So I want to tackle some of the things I think that rob us of our confidence. And I want to remind you of this. So true confidence, biblical confidence, is that all our failures, shortcomings, and brokenness, in spite of all of them, we are able to be made right with God. And that the way, the only way that this happens, is through faith. And that that faith is the work of the cross. When we try to add stuff to it, or take stuff away from it, we start to undermine the very foundation that we're supposed to build on. And it becomes an unsure foundation. And suddenly, our faith becomes unstable. And our hope is eroded. And our lives become shaken. And we start to question our right standing. And we start to question our position. The good news no longer feels good. It feels like a burden. It starts to lose its power. Joy falters. We lose peace. We lose faith, because our foundation is now not secure. And so I feel like for many of us, we kind of, that's the switch that I feel the Lord wants to flip. I think we kind of understand this thing of faith, and we kind of understand that we should be confident in him, but it also sounds a little too good to be true. I think marketing has made us suspicious of good deals. But man, let me tell you, there are still some out there, and this is the best one. So some of the things we add, I think legalism, self-righteousness, self-made righteousness. I think it's good to want to do well. I think it is good to want to be obedient and to follow the Lord and to obey his commands and to grow in these things. But man, the minute we start to think that that makes us right, you've slipped into self-righteousness. Your confidence has shifted from the person of Jesus and the work of the cross to, I had a good week. I did well. Didn't lose my temper once. I can confidently come into the presence of God in worship this morning. I think God looks at that and says, really? Really? And what about all the other stuff? Because if that's how we come, I think God could start to stack up the other evidence. Okay, great, you didn't lose your temper. But man, what's happening in your heart in that area? And then, confidence gone. And unfortunately, that's what the enemy does. He brings those accusations, and it can be difficult because we stand in front of him and we're like, yeah, that's true. Flip, I didn't lose my temper, but man, maybe I wasn't as honest as I should have been in that conversation. And how that accusation undermines my confidence and my right standing. And so I want to show you a beautiful picture of what faith looks like. Who is the father of our faith? Abraham. You know what I love? God calls Abraham the father of our faith before he was circumcised. So before he had the external manifestation of the law and before the law was given. And God calls him righteous. Abraham didn't stand on the covenant of circumcision. He didn't stand on the law. He had none of that yet. God looked at him and says, Abraham, you believed me. I'm going to count you as righteousness. And so the minute we start thinking that following the rituals or practices or following the law or following the culture of Christianity puts us in a position of right standing with God, we actually become self-righteous, legalist Pharisees. And that's what the Pharisees did. They're like, hey man, we're getting all the law right. I don't know who this Jesus guy is. And they missed him. And I love this. Romans 2, 28 to 29. You don't have to put it up, but it says, for you are not a true Jew just because you were born of Jewish parents or because you have gone through the ceremony of circumcision. No, a true Jew is one whose heart is right with God. And true circumcision is not merely obeying the letter of the law. Rather, it is a change of the heart produced by the Spirit. And a person with a changed heart seeks praise from God and not from man. The problem with this external obedience, the problem with trying so hard to get it right without an inward change, is that we don't actually change. We've just done behavior modification. But when we keep our hearts right with God and not just our actions, then he says, yes, you, a true Jew, truly justified, truly in right standing. Are you allowing him to change your heart? Are you allowing him to change who you are? Are you getting your heart to respond to God? Or is it just this external religion that we practice and we feel really good and everyone looks at us and we look really holy and we look like we're doing really well? But we're not in right standing. And if there's anything of that in you, I want you... That's good, man. It is good to want to do well. It is good to walk in the ways that the Lord's given to us. They're wise and they will save you. But man, they'll save your marriage or they'll save how you parent. But we're saved by our faith in Jesus. The minute we start to feel like we're qualified by what we're doing well, by what we do, we start to approach Jesus in that level of confidence, I think we miss it. And the other side of that is, what about when we do get it wrong? What about when we do sin? Who of you had a tough week? Everyone put up their hands for I walked in feeling confident this morning. Who of you had a tough week? Who of you did mess up? Who of you did fall into sin? Not enough hands going up here. You liars. You just lied right now. But I'm serious. When you walked in these doors, did you feel an element of like, man, I don't know which God I'm going to get this morning. I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to walk to the front and worship him with abandon. I don't know if I'm confident that he's actually going to find me acceptable and welcome me in and speak to me or speak through me or do something in me. Because if you walked in with a lack of confidence, you've built your faith on something other than the person of Jesus. You've moved your faith, man. You've moved it from something secure to your own abilities. And I got terrible news for you. You might walk out of here and have a good week this week, but the week after that, you're going to be back there. because you are going to mess up, because you are going to sin and fall short. And I'm not saying that that's a license for us just to walk around sinning wherever because, hey, man, I can just rely on this confidence. That's not a confidence. That's a presumption. It's an arrogance. My confidence is in this, is that I was a prisoner and I was a slave. And Jesus came and he set me free. He got me out of that stuff that I could never get out of. And because the doors have been ripped off that cell, I don't have to go back there. I don't have to struggle with that stuff anymore. I don't have to let that cruel master who took more from me than I ever wanted to give and kept me for far longer than I ever wanted to stay and who cost me so much, I don't have to. He doesn't own me anymore. And so because of that, I want to live differently and I want to walk differently. And, you know, I've known some guys who get set free from prison. And it takes a little while. It takes a while to walk fully in your freedom, and that is the journey for all of us as Christians. It might take you some time to fully be able to get out of whatever's got you, and I'm still there. There are still areas of my past and my brokenness that I'm walking out, but I have a confidence that Jesus has set me free from that stuff, and that actually, you know what? I will beat it. I might not have now, but I'm going to keep going because that doesn't own me anymore. And that when I do mess up, I'm not back there. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Would you forgive me? And then he looks at me and says, yeah, I will. I paid that price. I set you free, and I'll set you free again. And so come. Are we quick to repent? Or do we get stuck, and do we hide, and do we hide from our leaders, and hide from our friends, and hide from the Lord because of our shame? You've moved your faith. You've moved your faith. Do you let this good news transform me? Yes, I used to be an addict. Oh, but Jesus, you broke that thing. And I have a confidence and a faith that by the work of your Spirit, you're going to work that thing out of me. I have a confidence that I have been saved and that you are still saving me now and that one day I'm going to see you face to face and I will be saved. Do you live with that hope? Do you live with that assurance that no matter what you face here, you're going to see him? And does that not fill you with an indescribable and inexplicable joy? Because that is the only reason to keep following him. The only reason that I am a Christian is because I want to see him. Because that's what it means. To be a Christian is to be a follower of Christ. And I'm following him because I want to catch him. I want to get to him. Do you have a confidence even when that journey of freedom is long? I know some of you have been battling the same thing for 10 years. Does it rock your faith? Because it shouldn't. I've got children. It takes a long time for them to learn to walk. It takes a long time for them to learn to read and to write. It takes a long time for them to become responsible and to grow up and to mature. Sometimes these things just take time. By careful and patient instruction, I bring them through. Are you letting the Lord carefully and patiently instruct you, to raise you, to mature you, to keep going without losing confidence, without losing hope? Because, Lord, I've been struggling with this thing for 10 years. Well, will you keep struggling with it? Will you keep fighting it as you allow the Lord to grow you and to bring you into maturity? This is the thing about maturity. It just sometimes takes time. I've never met a mature 5-year-old. Some are more mature than others, but what about disappointments? Man, Lord, that thing I really had my hope in, that thing I was really trusting for, it didn't happen. Does that affect how you see God? Does it affect the faith you have in him? Does it affect your perception that he's a good and loving and kind Father? Or are you able to trust on and have confidence on and rely on the fact that he's not surprised, that he saw this coming, that he is good, that he will sustain you through that. Difficult circumstances. This is a huge one. Man, life just goes pear-shaped. Marriage falls apart. Job falls apart. Economy falls apart. Children rebel against you. Health fails. What is our first thought when that happens? Is it, God must be angry with me? This must be a consequence. This must be me having messed up. And sometimes, yes, our sin does bring consequence, but man, the Lord is loving and kind. He'll speak to you in that stuff. Or is it suddenly we think he's this angry God or an unfaithful God? Or do we have a confidence that, man, he's a good God, but we live in a broken world, and I live in a broken body. And I know a lot of broken people who do broken things. And yet for all of that, he is good and he is faithful. And that no matter what I face in this life, at least I know and I'm confident in the fact that his word says that nothing in all of creation will ever separate me from his love. And is that enough to sustain you? Because if it's not, you will lose your confidence and you will lose your hope and you'll lose your faith because you've built it on something other than faith. And where do we put our difficult circumstances? Where do we put our suffering? And you know where I put it? And I want to say, I'm not working, a bit of humility here, I'm not perfectly walking in these things. I am learning this stuff every single day. But if it comes to it, that death is kind of the ultimate consequence and end result of a lot of these things. And so even if I just persevere in this thing till death, at least then I will be face to face with the person of Jesus. I will no longer be broken or in a broken world, and my body will no longer be broken, and I'll no longer struggle with sin. I will be saved. I will see him face to face. That I can rejoice when I run into problems and trials, knowing that they produce a confident hope of salvation. And this hope will not lead to disappointment, for we know how dearly God loves us because he's given us the Holy Spirit to fill us with his love. I'm going to land this. I've gone too long, but quickly, some of us, I think we have the opposite problem. I think we're living in the promises of God. And we've put our faith in that. We've moved our faith from the promise giver to the promise. That job we once prayed for, that wife we prayed for, those children we prayed for, that change in circumstance we prayed for, that home we prayed for, that in his faithfulness he's given us, and now that very thing has become the reason that we're struggling to follow him. Are we letting these things keep us from our obedience? Are we letting these things erode our faith? And I don't want to throw a heavy on you. Those things are important. It's good to steward them well. We've got to be faithful in them. Can you imagine how different our Bibles would have looked if the father of our faith, Abraham, had held on to the promise of his son and not the promise giver? How different would our Bibles look if Abraham had not taken that son of his back to the Lord and said, Lord, it's not mine, it's yours. If he had not kept his faith in the one. And so I want us this morning to have a confidence that he chose you, a confidence that he chose you out of his goodness, that he chose you in his love to be his, that he made the way for you, that he paid a price for you, that he has peace with you, that he likes you, that he wants you, that he enjoys you, that he has a future and a plan for you. I want you to walk in a confidence that sin, that thing you're struggling with, that it is beatable, I want you to have a confidence that if circumstances come, it doesn't matter. Your faith is secure and unshakable if it's built on the person of Jesus. A confidence that isn't shielded behind pension funds or financial securities or children or careers or marriages or your own best efforts. A confidence to run, a confidence to risk, a confidence to walk in the things He has for you, a confidence to persevere with faith, knowing that there's an end, man. And if our lives don't look like that, I want to ask you this question. Have you not maybe built your confidence on the wrong thing? And if you have, I have some good news for you. There's this person, Jesus, and we get to hide behind Him. And you can actually come this morning and just say, Lord, I'm sorry. And then you can ask Him to put a faith in you again. And ask Him to put a confidence in you again. And maybe even you're sitting here this morning and you don't actually even know Him. Or you thought you did, but you realize you just knew your own best efforts and were doing quite well as what you thought a Christian is. Maybe this morning you want to come into a place of confidence, knowing that you are secure in your eternity. That you want to actually meet this Jesus. That you want to take advantage of this offer that is far too good to be true. And yet is. Maybe we can stand quickly, but I'd love to make that first opportunity, man. If you want to live a life of confidence, knowing that you have peace with God, I'd love for you to put your hand up because I want to introduce you to the man who's going to put that confidence in you. Is there anyone like that? You don't know Jesus, or you don't know Him the way you're realizing you need to this morning. Don't miss this chance to walk out here different. Don't miss a chance to walk out of here secure. Rooted on a firm foundation, no longer tossed by this world and by uncertainty and by difficulty. Don't miss the opportunity to leave here with the true confidence. Is there anyone like that here? Maybe for this morning, you realize that you've been hearing this word before. You've been understanding this thing, but not as clearly as you should have. It's been slightly tinny, like that word this morning. And the Lord has come and flipped a switch, and you've realized that your confidence is not in the person of Jesus. It is not in faith. And the good news is that there's a chance to leave here confident and different and changed. And I want you to walk confidently here to the front and stand in front of your Father, knowing that His blood is going to cover it and His Spirit is going to empower and change you to leave here with a confidence that you've never walked in before. And I want to say, don't miss the chance.